Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the AngloGold Ashanti Decarbonization Strategy. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero. Please note that this call is being recorded. I would now like to hand the call over to Stewart Bailey. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks, Irene. Good day, everyone. Thank you very much for joining us today to walk through our carbon emission reduction strategy, where we've set new targets for to achieve carbon reduction by 2030. Alberto will provide a presentation, and we'll take questions afterward. And before we do get going, I would just ask you to look at the safe harbor statement at the front of this presentation, which has some important information regarding forward-looking statements, and I do urge you to look at that. Without any further ado, I'm going to hand over to Alberto to provide the presentation. Alberto.
Thank you, Stewart. So if we go to the next slide, we recognize that as a business, we have a responsibility to proactively identify and address current and future climate-related threats. We also recognize that decarbonization is an essential tool to manage our climate transition risks and also to leverage the opportunities presented by climate change. In playing our part to limit climate change, we have identified a roadmap to deliver a 30% net reduction in our emissions by 2030, measured from our 2021 baseline. Indeed, when factoring in our anticipated growth by the end of the decade and the emissions that come with it, we could effectively be reducing our absolute emissions by 46%. We have worked closely with our sites to identify and scope key emission reduction initiatives to help us achieve most of that 30% by the end of the decade. While we are clear that we have an absolute reduction target, we will also more than halve our emissions intensity in the process. That is, the amount of emissions we generate for each ton of material we move. Before we talk about the costs, it's important to note that the vast majority of these projects are NPV positive, making them additive to the value of our business. In all, we estimate that the reductions we are outlining today will require an investment of approximately $1.1 billion to implement. Importantly, AngloGold will fund about $350 million of that with third parties, including renewable energy providers, making up the balance. Our treasury team will start to work to secure a green funding facility of about $250 to $300 million in the coming weeks, which will be exclusively used for financing green energy projects. We've also put in place the organizational governance framework and processes to ensure we achieve our targets and closely track the benefits of each initiative. The targets we've outlined today are the next significant chapter of our decarbonization journey. This actually is a journey that started more than 15 years ago, with a focus of reducing energy consumption at our carbon-intensive mines in South Africa. We underpinned that focus in 2008 with a long-term carbon intensity target to achieve a 30% reduction by 2022. Over the years, several energy initiatives gave us reductions in emissions, including the conversion of our Australia operations to natural gas and the installation of power-saving infrastructure in South Africa. We also built momentum through the closure of two carbon-intensive operations and the sale of our coal-powered mines in South Africa along the way. By the end of last year, our emissions intensity was 47% lower than when we set our targets. Importantly, though, our absolute emissions were down by 69%. Last year, our new climate change strategy was approved by the board, and a major component of that strategy was the development of a credible, detailed decarbonization pathway to net zero. It is important to clarify that the target we have announced today relates to our combined Scope 1 and Scope 2 emissions. Before going further, let's pause for a moment to remind ourselves of the sources of emissions that are relevant to AngloGold Ashanti. At present, our material carbon emissions are Scope 1, which arise from the direct combustion of fossil fuels, which are used to power our heavy equipment fleet and to produce electricity at our remote sites. Our indirect Scope 2 emissions arise from our grid-connected operations, though we are fortunate that these have substantial levels of renewables in their energy mix. We quantified our Scope 3 emissions in detail for the first time in 2021, with about 95% of these value chain emissions coming from just three categories. In reducing these indirect emissions, we'll need to collaborate with our major suppliers. As I mentioned, our absolute carbon emissions are down almost 70% since first committing to a carbon intensity reduction target in 2007. We selected 2021 as a baseline to measure future performance, as this was the first full year with no South African mining assets in our portfolio, so it most accurately reflects our current suite of assets. In recent years, we began tracking the carbon intensity of our energy mix against a basket of our gold mining peers. This essentially looks at our emissions for each gigajoule of energy we consume. It gives a picture of how clean our energy mix is, stripping out any distortions caused by grade, mine type, or scale of operations. Reassuringly, we have seen that our overall energy mix is becoming less carbon intensive relative to the peer group. We'll be looking to maintain this relative advantage and successful decarbonization because it's key in this regard. As noted earlier, we have a new climate strategy. Its goal is to ensure the climate resilience of our business, including through the adaptation of our sites and host communities, ensuring they're more resilient in a world where more extreme weather events are becoming more commonplace. Decarbonizing our energy mix is also a major component of this strategy. And although lower emissions are important in themselves, these initiatives also help manage transition risks in a world where sovereign emissions targets are becoming more and more onerous and in capital markets where standards are becoming stricter with each passing month. Finally, we have also uncovered financial opportunities in many of the decarbonization initiatives that we have explored thus far. Our carbon emissions profile grows organically from our existing operations until supplemented by Colombia and Nevada growth projects from 2025. Measuring of the 2021 baseline, we are able to reduce our emissions by 30%, which, as we stated before, when considering the projected growth, equates to an absolute 46% reduction in emissions by 2030. This chart reflects our consolidated initiatives. The biggest contribution to our reductions in Australia is the Australian operations switching to renewables. Brazil, Colombia, Nevada, we will pay to ensure our full power fields are from renewables, a process which is fully certified by those local utilities. In Tanzania, the switch to the TANESCO grid at Geita, which is almost complete, would fully replace the diesel gensets currently in use and give us a far less carbon-intensive power source. Renewables are also looking promising at Siguiri and CVSA, where investigations are already underway. In Ghana, we are exploring a 100-megawatt solar farm to feed Obuasi and Iduapriem. And in Brazil and Australia, we're looking at optimizing fleet electrification. Beyond these well-understood initiatives, we will investigate the options to scale up the wind and solar plants in Ghana and Argentina and expanding the BEVs in Brazil. As with our absolute emissions, our emission intensity has reduced significantly since first coming to an intensity target in 2007. The reduction has largely been due to divestiture of our South African assets, but also through efficiency improvements. We have the potential to more than halve our intensity from 32 kilotons of CO2 in 2021 to 14 CO2 by 2030. In summary, we have a healthy pipeline of projects with contributions from all of the business units, which are in varying phases of study. We're off to a strong start with Brazil's green energy certification and Gator's grid connection, followed by the Australia renewable projects, which will start yielding benefits from 2024. We're also making excellent progress advancing a solar solution in Ghana to further lower the emissions at Obuasi and Iduprim, and in Guinea at our Siguiri operation. In Nevada and Colombia, our project teams are doing the necessary work to ensure they develop mines of the future by striving to be net zero emitters. The roadmap to net zero. We have committed to being net zero by 2050, and this is a three-step process. First, we must establish clean sources of energy, which we've outlined today, namely clean grid power, solar, and wind farms. Second, as technology development permits, we need to progressively electrify our processes and move our equipment into this cleaner energy source, ensuring that these are operated with what we like to call green electrons. And finally, third, we will create or purchase offsets for those very hard to abate emissions. These steps will help us meet our commitment to achieve net zero by 2050. You can't look at mining companies' emissions without considering Scope 3. For the uninitiated, Scope 3 emissions are generated in the supply chain from getting inputs to site and from getting our production to market. But that's not all. Also included, and this is important for all miners, are emissions from refining our products to final state. The ICMM is clear. Scope 3 is critical to minimizing our overall impact. And gold producers are extraordinarily well placed in this regard. Not only are our Scope 1 and 2 emissions low relative to our diversified mining peers, but we're simply in a different league on Scope 3. Comparing gold miners next to diversified miners that produce other metals and bulk commodities show the relative importance of Scope 3 to each. Looking at the left hand of the chart, you can barely see the total emissions for five of the largest gold producers. Compare that to the emissions of five of the largest diversified miners whose Scope 3 emissions from the downstream transport, processing, and use of the products account for about 95% of their total emissions. Remember, all the world's listed gold producers together typically generate roughly 78 odd million tons of GHGs in Scope 1, 2, and 3. That's around 4% of the emissions of just these top five diversified miners. Despite the relative low materiality of Scope 3 emissions for gold miners, AngloGold Ashanti will nonetheless be taking action to reduce them in partnership with targeted suppliers. So in closing, we have a credible, affordable, and effective pathway mapped out to achieve our 30% net reductions in emissions by 2030. This builds on a strong track record of carbon reduction in the past 15 years. We will achieve most of this new target in the next 5 years. We will, in the meantime, be looking for ways to reduce that further by 2050 as we deliver on the bigger commitment to achieve net zero. Thank you very much. Stuart.
Thanks, Alberto. Irene, questions?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if anyone would like to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then one on your touchtone phone or on the keypad on your screen. If you however wish to withdraw the question, you may press star and then two to remove yourself from the question queue. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then one. For those on the webcast, you may submit a question using the text box. Just a moment while we queue for questions.
Irene, maybe I can go to the webcast first for a few questions. Alberto, the first question from the webcast is in two parts. It says, what inflationary rates have you built into your forecasts? The second question is, given the sort of that most companies are embarking on decarbonization projects of one sort or another, do you foresee there being big supply constraints in the providers of this electricity? I'll stop there for a second.
Okay, thanks, Stuart. Look, we're actually seeing inflation for next year around 6.7% and then coming down. So, but the way we have dwelt with these in this, in our forecast, is for including a contingency in the scoping of projects that is much larger than usual. So we had included a contingency of about 35% to deal with whatever price capex increases that we may face. I think on the second one, we've already advanced in several projects and there are issues, but I think the world is getting more and more to deal with them. So, again, this is for 2030. So I don't think in the scheme of things, this will be so restrictive.
Perfect. Thanks, Alberto. The next one is, could you give us a sense what your energy mix is likely to look like by the end of the decade when you reach this target?
Yes. We plan of having about, it'll be about 62% will be between hydro, wind, and solar, and the rest will be thermal. As
Thanks.
We all know, by 2030, still the world will not have solved the firm energy issue, which is a problem. Hydro is firm, but not wind and solar. So that's still something that I would expect that this ratio is much higher towards the end of the 2040, where you would imagine that storage would be in a much better situation. But for 2030, we assume these percentages, 62% on renewables.
Thanks very much, Alberto. Irene, I see there's some questions on the call. Maybe I can switch over to you for those.
Thank you, sir. We have a question from Jared Hoover of RMB Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, afternoon, Alberto and team. Thanks for the call. Maybe just two questions from my side, please. The first with regards to the cost savings. So, I mean, you've highlighted how much capex you're going to spend, and that's going to result in some of the energy costs being a bit cheaper than what it is at some of your operations. Are those cost savings potentially going to be built into your full asset potential program and how you see that evolving to reduce the gap between yourselves and senior peers to about $100 an ounce? Or will any potential cost savings be over and above whatever the FAP envisions? And then my second question, and I understand it's still a bit early in the process, but it looks like there's about $300 to $350 million of on-balance sheet capex to come between now and the end of the decade. Do you have an idea of how you plan to sequence that between now over the next few years? Is it going to be linear, or could it be a bit more lumpy as you push some of these projects up into pre-feas and feasibility status? I'll leave it there for now. Thanks.
Thank you. So on the first one, they're separate projects, and these is overall are not probably except the one in Tanzania. They're not included in the full asset potential. Look, this what we have obviously been careful, and when we say is that most of them are NPV positive. Actually, they're in the two digits in IRR, but this is not why we're doing this, and it will take some time. So let's say the benefits of this in terms of impact on the balance sheet will be much more towards the end of the 2030, and at full asset potential, we're really trying to have benefits in in 24 and 25. So yeah, they're tracked separately right now. The average payback, not average, maybe average and good, is it's about 4 to 5 years of these projects. So they will have, as I said, more impact towards 2000, towards the end of the decade, 27 and 28. The balance sheet, we're still working on it, and it will be lumpy, but I think most of them, we expect, 24 to 26 will be probably some areas of high investment, years of high investment.
Okay, thanks, Alberto. That's quite clear. I mean, I was going to ask you about the IRR on some of the projects, but it's comforting to know that number is in the double digits. But obviously, I do know this, the ESG spend that you need to make is obviously not purely economic. It is for broader concerns. But yeah, I'll leave it there. Thanks for the feedback.
One of the things probably to add is we do expect, and we'll have to see this, but the available funding and the price of that funding is quite attractive. So that actually helps, obviously.
Thank you. Back to Stuart for webcast questions.
Thanks very much. Alberto, some of this is, I think, picked up in the prior question, but I'll ask it anyway. And this is from Mark Hassey at Oaktree, who says, do we expect any OPEX savings from replacing OPEX with CAPEX through this program of investing capital for emission reduction?
Yes. Definitely. I would say that's how it would be reflected. So clearly in the cost of energy overall, we would expect that it would go down. So, but as I said, we're not, let's say that's not the area of focus right now of full asset potential. I think it will be, we'll probably start modeling that probably from 26 onwards, which we right now we're working on 23, 24, and 25. But yeah, there will be OPEX savings.
Alberto, another question here is on the viability of solar in some of the jurisdictions in which you operate, and pointing to your ability to put solar projects of size in Ghana and Guinea, for example. Would you be able to comment on that?
Interestingly, Ghana has made great progress in the past 5 years. They've probably multiplied their, from a low base, but by 15, if I remember well, in the last 5 years. So we are planning to partner with a public sector partner in the northern part of the country, where the solar radiation is at its greatest. So that's, for example, in Ghana. But yeah, in Australia, that's well and truly very well developed, so there's no issue with that. In others, like Argentina, we're still working on those ones.
Excellent. Thanks, Alberto. I think that does it from the webcast. Irene, anything else on the line?
We have no further questions on the line, sir.
Perfect. Thanks, Irene. Alberto, any closing comments from you before we tie it up for the day?
Just probably we've been working on this now for some time. I'm quite happy how the team has put all of this together, and it's doing we're doing good by doing well. So it's not always the case that you can do this. So I'm quite happy how this has come together. It will crowd out a bit of CapEx. We'll try to see how we work on that. But overall, it is a good story, and it's very detailed. We know what we'll do, and we have, I would think, it's close to 80 or something percent clearly identified the way of how we're going to do this, and we're scoping on about more than 20% of others. So I'm quite happy to be presenting this today and to the market as part of our obligation as one of the big gold companies in the world to be good stewards of them and try to make our contribution to the climate. So thank you all for listening today, and we're happy to answer whatever questions the team is ready to answer, whatever questions you may have during the next days. Thank you, Stuart, and again, a thank you to the whole team, to Tim, to Tony, for all of you, Stuart, that have worked so hard in putting this together.
Thanks, Alberto. Thanks very much, Irene. Thanks, everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.